This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome to the Chelsea Fancast. I am Stamford Chidge, Chelsea Fancast. They're slightly different, guys. It's our kind of occasional show that we do when we get so many emails from you lovely people that we can't squeeze them into the regular Monday night Fancast. So there we go. So we've devised a special show called In Off the Post, where JK and my good self will go through the week's correspondence. Mr. Kidd, how the devil are you?
Oh, devilish, devilish. And we just have the 10 to read out.
Yeah.
Just
I might have a couple that slipped in through the net from Patreon and Discord. Yeah, no, well, I didn't get any from Dane today. So
Okay.
So there we go. So should we start the ball rolling with the lovely Josh Barrow?
This is from Josh Barrow. Dear Chidge, JK, and the gang. Well, it's just me and Chidge, actually, but I can pretend to be the gang, if you like. Hello! Yeah, I've got somebody here with me. Yeah. It was a bit rubbish, wasn't it, Chidge? Anyway, yeah. I've loved the game of football since I was introduced to it as a child. I've been a Chelsea fan since 2009, when I watched the Blues robbed by Overbo. I can't remember his name. Overbo. No one at Overbo.
Norwegian geezer.
Yeah, I know. The dreadful... I was present, of course, and poor old Drogba got suspended for 8 games for telling the truth. But I'm an American who's Overbo, isn't it? Overbo,
yeah.
Yeah, not Overbo. But I'm an American who's never set foot inside Stamford Bridge. A plastic. No, mate, you're not a plastic.
No, nothing about
football. As such, I'm having a bit of difficulty understanding what it is we're actually trying to do under Tuchel. Oh, forgive him, he's hardly been there. I've been thinking about our goals since Tuchel has arrived. There are none. Versus Burnley, but wouldn't it be great if that's what you did as a manager? No, we don't score, we just defend. Versus Burnley, both Dave and Alonso scored on the counter. Against Spurs, Jorginho scored a penalty that was won on a counter-attack. Against Sheffield United, Mount scored after we successfully beat a high press, and Jorginho scored another penalty, which was won via counter-attack. Versus Barnsley, Tammy scored after we beat a high press. Against Newcastle, Giroud scored from a ball to Werner over the top of a high press, and Werner scored from a corner kick. And against Southampton, Mount scored a penalty. In the 7 games since Tuchel has taken over, we've scored 9 goals, and 3 of them, a full third of our goals, have been penalties, 2 of which were won on the counter-attack. Of our remaining 6 goals, 2 were from counter-attacks. 3 were from breaking against a high press, which is fairly similar to a counter-attack. One was from a set piece. When I look at the team sheets, I don't see much in the way of attacking ambition. We're set up with 3 centre-backs, 2 defensive-minded midfielders who offer nothing going forward, a pair of wing-backs and only 3 out-and-out attacking players. It seems like a lineup built to soak up pressure and counter-attack. And the way we've scored our goals is reflective of that. However, we're playing as a side who wants to play a possession-based game. Since Tuchel has arrived, we've averaged 70% possession. And with all of that possession, we never look threatening. Granted, I have a bit of an uneducated eye, but very similar eye to us, but we look like a team that has no idea of what it is or what it's trying to do. It's as though we've taken a Mourinho approach to the lineup and tactics while making a pitiful attempt at playing like a Guardiola side. My impression of Tuchel from the press conferences is quite positive, but I'm having trouble seeing how this is an upgrade from Frank or even Sarri. Please help me understand. Best regards, Joshua Barrow. Well, can I just restate what I said in the show, on the Monday show, which is that it's very early days. He's just trying to get the defence organised, and I think we should be forgiving that he has succeeded in getting the defence organised. And I don't think we have the players, or he hasn't managed to make them into the players that that can put the ball in the net. But yes, as we've already established, you're absolutely right. It's not only that we've got defensive midfielders, it's that none of them can shoot. But he's not being helped by having shot-shy wingers and players completely out of form for whatever reason, particularly those we've purchased at enormous expense. So I don't think we should be damning Tuchel after such a short space of time. And we should be thankful that we're not losing. And I think that's a positive, as I said at the beginning of the Monday show. So,
yeah, I too, JK, can reiterate a lot of the things I said on Monday night, but from a slightly different angle. I think one has to be kind to Tuchel because he's only had 9 matches. And I think, as we were saying on Monday night, I think he's the arch pragmatist and he needs to keep his job. He needs to keep getting results and he needs to get Chelsea in the top 4. And he's shrewd and smart enough and experienced enough as a manager to know how to do that. And of course, the problem that he has is he's inherited, you know, a mess. Now, not a mess caused by Frank Lampard, but a mess caused by this club sacking managers and buying players to suit certain managers over the last 7 years. So it's really interesting what Josh has picked out there. You know, we're playing kind of half possession football, half counter-attacking football. Well, that's really a function of the different kind of players we've got who suit different kind of systems. I mean, you could say, you know, for example, we know Alonso can only play as a wing back. We know that most of our central defenders can only play in a 3. On the other hand, you could say, well, we could try and play like Liverpool with Firmino, Sane and Salah, because we've got Werner, Pulisic and Hudson-Odoi, really quick players, small players who can all interchange and all of whom got an eye for goal, technically. But we don't do that. You know, we've got wingers. I mean, it's a mess. Systemically, it's a mess. So no wonder we don't look fluid. No wonder we don't know what style we're trying to play. No wonder even if Tuchel's telling them to play one way, we find out that they're playing another way because they're playing how they know how to play and that might not fit in with the system he wants. So it's a bit of a mess. And I think he's dealing with what he's got. So he's trying to get the best out of him, of the mess that he's got. And I think, as a lot of the boys were saying on Monday night, actually, quite sensibly, really, that we won't really get, I don't think, a proper view of what a Tuchel system and a Tuchel team really looks like until next season, when he's had a chance to assess and try and get rid of some people that aren't going to fit the way he wants to play and bring in people who will fit the way he wants to play, which is what all managers do. So,
and also, I think that he wants to try and drill them, as he said in various interviews, that it's all about learning how to play the way he wants them to play. And some of them, I think, are possibly psychologically impaired by having to play a way that didn't suit, didn't suit them.
I've got a real cob on about the automaton nature of modern footballers, and this is one of the reasons I didn't like Sarri as a man. I don't like managers who basically robotically instill a plethora of instructions into players, because I think all that does, it just overcoaches players, and you end up with players who can't think for themselves on the pitch, can't respond to what's happening in front of them, can't respond to a different tactical setup that they were not told to face. And I think we this is not just a Chelsea problem. I think this has become universal in football, but it is definitely a Chelsea problem. Because when we certainly used to go, you could see the look of bewilderment on players' faces when they look at the bench because they don't know what to do. Now, when Jonathan and I were growing up, players were, you know, could think for themselves. Brian Clough's tactical talk at Nottingham Forest was, if God had wanted you to play football in the sky, he would have put grass on the clouds, you know, or get the ball and give it to the fat bloke on the left. That's it, you know, because he basically bought really good players that he knew could play football and think for themselves and just let them go out and play. You know, now, OK, I know things have changed a lot, but Liverpool were the same. You know, Liverpool's coaching was non-existent. You talk to some of these, even of the Graham Souness, well, Graham Souness era was arguably when they're at their peak, but you talk to some of their old players and he said they didn't do systems and tactics. They just bought fucking good players who knew how to play football. Let's go out and play, you know. And in a way, you could say that elite footballers should know how to play football. That's why they're elite footballers.
I suppose, though, that there are modern tacticians who prevent that kind of flair player from playing with their tactics.
Yeah, but if you're a good footballer,
argument, you should be able to deal with it on the pitch.
Yeah, because your manager can't. He can't come on and kick the ball for you. Yeah. He can only change it really by making a tactical substitution and bring on some instructions or at half time. You know, and I think, I mean, you know, this is the whole kind of argument about leaders. I heard a very interesting interview by Sam Allardyce just after he got the West Brom job, actually, where he felt his generation of managers were partly to blame for this, that they've overcoached players so much that this is why you don't have leaders in the game anymore, because they've learned how to not think for themselves and not get themselves out of the shit.
So you've muted the personality to an extent.
Yeah. It's not my way of management. I spent 25 years in the film business managing not like that. I used to hire very good people, give them the parameters in which I wanted them to work, and let them get on with it.
Yes.
Like I do with the fan cast, JK.
I was about to say, much like you do with me on this program.
Oh, I don't hire any of you. We do it because we love doing it, but... You know, it's not an accident who I've got on this show. Everybody's fucking superb. I could walk away from this show every week and it'd still be fantastic because you're all brilliant.
Except we wouldn't be running it because we don't know about Mixlr or how to do it.
I know, and that's my fatal flaw, my tragic flaw. I end up having to do all the work, but it's a pleasure because you're all great at what you do. You know, that's get good people together and you produce good work. Things really are that simple.
Yes. Well, he thought he'd got good people in Werner and Ziyech.
So maybe it's not that simple. I'll stick to doing podcasting then. How about that? Anyway, good email, Josh, but you're not untutored. You're seeing exactly what we're seeing and unfortunately not seeing the solution equally like we're not. But
I think possibly expressed even more fluently than we did. So
I definitely agree with that. Right. This is from the lovely Bob Smales. I'm going to have a sip of my Guinness for this one.
I've drunk my tea, so I can't have it. I've only got.
If there's a long email, I'll warn you, and then you can nip out and make one. Right, Bob Smales. As we now start the inevitable discussion on whether Tommy T is the Messiah or just a naughty boy, surely we need to revisit the strategy of the club and its owner. We're told that each manager gets around 18 months to win something purposeful or be prepared for the inevitable. Clearly, a short-term strategy. So why is it we don't buy players who are proven quality, who can make an immediate impact? Surely this season the cash would have been better used on an absolute proven striker, a true number 9, not a Timo, and a world-class centre-half. Both could have been obtained with the cash we spent. But instead, we buy young players like Havertz and Timo, and players who have not yet achieved much at the top level, like Ziyech, but may deliver in the future. I'm not saying that this is wrong, but it does not fit the strategy of the club, so it does not make any sense. You can only assume everyone understands the strategy, but this is Chelsea. As I write, it's pretty much last year's team with Timo and Mendy. Timo is, as no doubt you discussed tonight, still a work in progress, so not a massive improvement and certainly unlikely this season to get us higher than Frank's fourth. If you were ruthless, you could say that money was not well spent. Sadly, if we don't achieve instant success, we get a new manager who will have his own idea on system and players. In the last few seasons, we've seen both Zuma and Alonso come back into the fold, players like Chile sitting on the bench, players are bought and dumped because each manager has his own clear agenda. You just can't run a club and expect success if you keep changing managers and all the mayhem that follows. We had an opportunity to reset with Frank and the kids, but blew it. The club won plaudits for this, and the fans were, I think, mostly on board. People always talk about how it works for the club as we keep winning trophies, but how many more would we have won with stability? Maybe it's easier to feel perplexed when you're not going every week to support. Up the Blues, Robert Smales. Yeah, Bob, I think you make some really good points, points that I've certainly made myself many, many, many times on this show and in print. And you know, I know that one of the comments that often gets fired back is, oh, yeah, but sacking managers works at Chelsea. We're always winning stuff. But I think that that's not forensic enough. We spent a lot of time last week talking about the fact that Chelsea had not made it past the knockout round of the Champions League since 2014. That is not the kind of success that we bought into when Roman bought the club. We haven't signed any... Diogo Costa was arguably, buying a player at the peak of his powers, as in not a promising 22-year-old who might be one of the world's best in 5 years' time. I'd say possibly Costa was the last time he bought a player like that, whereas we were buying four or five of them in one season when Roman first came in. So I agree with you. I think that you should be saying, you know, I know what a perfectionist JK is, and he'll be proud of me for saying this, I'm sure, but you should be saying, how much more could we have won had we been more stable as a club? You know, we probably could have won more Champions League. So I think he makes some very, very valid points there. I really, really do. But
you have to argue whether, in fact, Frank was the stability.
No, I don't think he was. I think Frank was always going to be the stopgap. And we've gone into that in granular detail. I think the other thing, and what I would say a mitigation, Bob, is that, I mean, I don't know this for an absolute fact, but I know enough people close enough to the club to believe it. But I don't think they don't actually set out to fire managers deliberately after 18 months. I think they wanted Conte to stay longer than he did. They wanted Sarri to stay longer than he did. They wanted Mourinho to stay longer than he did, you know. But things tend to happen, which means that they feel they just can't really keep them. So they don't actually deliberately go out to be batshit insane and instable. They're quite the opposite, but it doesn't work out like that. This is a fascinating email from a young chap, I feel, JK.
Should I do it to my best young chap?
No, don't do that. Don't do that. It'd be belittling.
It would be belittling. I wasn't really going to do it like that. I just thought I'd give you an option.
Hello, Chidge, and the finest London gang members. Right, well, I better not do that impression either. I've been thinking about writing to you boys, or should I say grandpas. I'm so sorry. What did he write?
Grandpas?
There? Grandpas. So, yes, okay. I have a 12-year-old daughter. I'm not a grandpa. Anyway, I'll start again. I've been thinking about writing you boys, or should I say grandpas. Been a Chelsea fan for 20 years, came to London twice to watch Chelsea play. I love this club more than anything, and how Chelsea plays does determine my weekend mood. I've sometimes complained about Chelsea, but I only give two of them today. The show after Lampard got sacked, one of the panel came on and used offensive words against Mr. Roman A, which I think is unfair because that man only wants Chelsea to succeed. That's Roman, not the offensive man. We need to separate Lampard, the player, from the Lampard, the manager. If Lampard was any other coach, I'm sure we're going to say he had the sacking coming and he did a lot of bad stuff. He wasn't perfect as a manager, made a lot of errors. So don't make the board seem like the villain. They're not perfect. But I choose to remember Super Frank only as a player, but not manager, because he wasn't good enough as a manager. I will love him till death. Number two, second, why do people think 3-4-3 is a defensive formation? We're always attacking with seven players, front three, two wingbacks, one of the two midfielders and Dave. Is that not enough? Against Southampton, I believed our setup was good, but the players just refused to be decent. I can count five good plays that needed a final pass for a goal, but the players fucked it up. Kante had two, Kovacic two, Werner one, and Reece James one. What do you want a coach to do when the players' decision-making is awful? If those players can't make final passes, what can the coach do about that?
We praise Kante for winning the ball back, but he can't do anything meaningful after winning the ball back. Kovacic dribbles past 100 players, but can't do anything meaningful with the final pass. Can we all agree that we have a lot of players that aren't good enough, including Kante, one-way player, win the ball back, cannot make a sweet pass to save his life? How much do I miss fantastic Fab Four? I hope to share a drink with you boys in the future, talking about how my dad wanted me to support Liverpool because of Michael Owen. Chelsea forever. Thanks, Mr. Williams. No, I was a bit taken aback being called a grandpa. That was all at the front.
We're probably old enough to be his grandpa.
I know, I am completely old. That's what I slightly was ashamed of course, because I am indeed old enough.
Even I'm old enough, really, to be his grandpa.
Yeah,
probably.
I think probably all of us on here are indeed old enough to be his grandpa, other than possibly Dean.
Dino.
Who was it who came on and was rude about Roman?
I think that's just not true, actually.
No, I don't think we've ever.
I think a lot of people are just fucking sensitive about. I mean, look, this is not fucking China or North Korea or Russia. Okay, nobody's perfect. If we think Roman's made a stupid decision, we're going to say so. But it doesn't mean we're ungrateful. On the other hand, we're not in fealty to him. You know, we don't have to suck up to everything he does. This is my club as much as it is Roman Abramovich's. Just because he's spunked over £1 billion into it doesn't negate that fact. So if I think he's, you know, he's not above criticism, but I don't remember anybody being rude about him on the show.
I don't think anybody ever has it. I think we've been critical of the board, obviously. That's been something.
Well, the board technically is Roman.
It is him, but at the same time, I don't think we've ever said Roman. I think this is a very good point he makes about 3-4-3, because it's absolutely right. They are attacking in that setup because they've got the wing-backs to do the attacking. The dilemma is, as he says, they keep making, as Tuchel says, imprecise decisions. The lack of precision in the final third of the field is absolutely ghastly for what he's trying to achieve. Woeful. Absolutely woeful. And he's right. But I don't think he's right to say, I think Kante's improved after winning the ball back. And similarly, Kovacic, he can dribble past 100 players. And I think his passing, I think he's getting better with it.
But
I think it's actually more to do with, as you say, Mr. Williams, it could be Miss Williams. What do you want a coach to do when the player's decision making is awful? The decision making has been absolutely awful. I agree completely.
Well, I think the point that he makes is really good about missing Fabregas. And I think this is a very not talked about issue by us in particular, actually. Because we should remember, absolutely remember. Okay, and when he was sold, he was, you know, his legs are gone. There's no doubt about that. But the person who came in to replace Fabregas was Jorginho.
Yeah, no comparison.
Jorginho is not fit to lick the piss off Fabregas's boots in terms of scoring goals, linking the defence and the attack, or the midfield and the attack, and putting in defence-splitting passes like Fabregas, who, frankly, is one of the best players I've ever seen at this club in that position. And I used to make the point in a rather rude way. I said, if we wanted to, you know, why would we want to replace a player who can't run and track back and tackle with a player who can't run, track back and tackle, but can't actually do the things that Fabregas did well, which is Jorginho. This is why I've never really warmed to Jorginho. Because I understood entirely that he was essentially the replacement for Fabregas. And Fabregas going forward was a much better player. But his legs had gone and he couldn't defend. And we were getting exposed left, right and centre. And I do get that. But it goes back to what I was saying about Mount on the Monday night show. That we just lack a midfielder who can link it all together. You know, and that's why I think Mount would work there. Especially with Havertz, you know, much higher up the pitch. You know, in this kind of 9.5 role that Tuchel's talking about. But I think the other point, which again we discussed at length really, was the fact that we have a real hodgepodge of attacking players. We've got a mixture of wingers, inside forwards, you know, strikers who can play a certain style, but, you know, not on... I mean, Drogba, I know he's a terrible barometer to use because he was such a phenomenal world-class player. But, you know, there were many facets to Drogba's attacking play. I mean, he was good in the air, He could shoot from long range. He could score tap-ins. He could score world class worldies. They could go in off his arse. He could create goals. He could play on the wings as well as straight through. He could link play. He could play with his back. He was such a wonderful all round striker. It just makes you realise what a beautiful player he was for us, because they're really rare. It seems to me that strikers these days don't have that all around ability. They're like, either they're a good hold up striker or they're a nippy inside forward type striker. You know, you don't seem to get these. Lewandowski's the only one I can think of who's a bit like Drogba in that sense. He can play between the lines. He can play up front on his own. He can play with his back to goal, score from close in and long. You know, I think that basically we just have a dearth of these players. And perhaps it's because of all these fucking hipster managers who want to play with small blokes and false number nines. I rest my case, my lud.
I think that's very well expressed,
Jim. Thank you very much, Jonathan. So sweet of you to say so.
Good. It's you, Jim.
Is it me?
Yes. Andrew Davies.
It is indeed. Hi, JK, Chidge, and the rest of you. Lovely, lovely lot. Just a quick email, if you'll allow me, for me to stroke Jonathan's ego. Ooh, misses. He completely nailed it a few weeks back when he said that the reason for this tippy-tappy football dressage is because we don't have any midfielders that can actually have a pop on goal. Going back to that theme again, the primary focus of Kova, Jorginho and Kante is to find a man. Now, there isn't anything necessarily wrong with that. It's just that if no ball is on, their only alternative in their eyes is to pass it sideways or back 5 yards to the person who they received it from. Kovacic can't shoot for Toffee and is the new Mikel or Makélélé. The vast majority of Georgie's goals are from 12 yards, and it's always a surprise when Kante pops up with a goal. Invariably, this inability to try and test the keeper puts so much more pressure on the forwards, or when we're pressuring teams, you'll find Christensen, as he did on Tuesday night, or Rudiger, try and lump one in from 35 yards out where it goes high and wide. I guess it's unfair to harp back to days gone by, but we've always had players in the middle of the park who can put the ball in the back of the net. Obviously, Lampard is a prime example, but through recent years, we've had Fabregas, Matic, Balak, Essien, Ramirez, all able to be relied upon to chip in with a few goals. I think it's the one clear area that Mason needs to improve upon, and once he settles, maybe Havertz will be one to help out too. But JK perfectly made the point of why, despite the lion's share of possession, we just seem to play safe, unintrusive balls in the middle of the park. Hopefully Tommy T will be able to work on this as he gets to know the players and delivers that attacking football he has promised us. That said, what a brilliant win on Tuesday night. We've got a real chance to progress in the Champions League for the first time in a long time. And just how much do you love that beautiful man, Olivier Giroud? Here's the second leg. Keep the blue flag flying high and up the Chelsea. Cheers, Andrew. I mean, points we've made many, many times. And I think, JK, just picking up on that and rather than, you know, going over old ground, you know, I'm really very conscious of the fact that Tuchel made a big thing about, I like to play the attacking fluid football. It has to be all gung-ho and attacking. And I like, you know, and I believe him. I think that's genuine. But I think what he has to do is he's got to figure out, I mean, you know, I don't want him to get like locked into just one way of playing, because I think modern managers are required to have plans A, B, C, D and E. But, you know, either are we going to be a counter-pressing team? So we're going to rely on the pace of our very quick forward line. Are we going to be a possession-based football team that tries to play between the lines and put people through? In which case, you know, I think that's great, playing like Guardiola does. But I like to see that kind of football played when you've got a striker like Aguero, who is just deadly. You know, if his movement's good enough and he can play in that kind of a system where they're tippy-tappy, tippy-tappy, tip, boom, in, great, no problem with that. But it's like, pick one. Pick a system. Pick a way of playing.
I think somebody who can score repeatedly like that, it changes the complexion of the game so frequently that the opposition will be able to come on to you in a way that they weren't before. So perhaps that's what he's used to playing, is that he has somebody who can put the ball in the net with the amount of possession we've got and with the tightness of the defence. It just is that, as and I've said, and Andrew has very nicely supported me here, that we haven't got anybody like that. And as you're saying, Chidge, that we haven't got an Aguero style who will indeed put the ball in the net with a beautiful cross. I mean, it's the same thing, a beautiful shot, I should say. It's the same thing with Adore, who I keep going on about. We just need to see more of his shooting boots. And we need to, because he has got the skill and he's got the pace to.
It's good effort against United, actually, which we overlooked.
Yeah, yeah, went wide, absolutely. Yeah. That was a great move. You see, suddenly in the midst of all this, we see great moves. It was a great move against Southampton the other day that Alonso blasted wide. Suddenly they've got these little moments in them and you just go, yeah, that's the way he wants to play. But then it's almost as if they tense up a bit, particularly up front. But yeah, we should be. We should, our previous email from A. Williams said, you know, we should be in a position to get forward to score. But and as I'll keep going on about it, we just don't at the moment have that ability. And I think he'll be working on it. And the more time he's got to work with them, the better it'll be. It's just a question of we've said this every season recently, but you know, all these players will go, we'll see who else are going to get in, they'll go, and then to our horror, none of the players goes at all, except the difference was is they've got in these they've got the new players in from the continent who at the moment just aren't achieving it for whatever reason. Anyway, let's carry on.
Indeed.
Number five, Ben Brooks. Hey, Stanford, Chidge and Jonathan, plus revolving guests. Yes, they are, like they're like
they've revolved out of here tonight.
Yeah, they have. They've gone. They've just us two. Thanks so much for reading my poem about Frank out on the pod. Made my dad proud. Made me feel all warm inside, even more part of my Chelsea family. Oh, Ben, thanks. Here's a question for you. In my first ever Chelsea game as a little kid in the 90s with my brother Dan, also a kid, we noticed at the ticket gate upon entering the stadium someone wearing the famous Chelsea shirt with Chief Moa written on the back of the shirt. Aha, we still laugh about it to this day. Do you know who this man is? Can we try and track the Chief Mower down? I hope he's well. Kind regards, Benjamin William Oscar Brooks. P.S. gave my full name at the end so Jonathan could read it out all regal and that. Cheers. Benjamin William Oscar Brooks. My lords, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Benjamin William Oscar. I'll say that again. Oscar Brooks. Well done. Thank you. Yes,
it.
Chief Moa. Obviously, Chief one man went to Moa.
He was the Chief Moa.
Yeah, rather than man who goes on the pitch and gives it a quick once over with the blades. If you know who the Chief Moa would be, I don't know.
I confess, I don't remember seeing him, which is very remiss of me. I was probably drunk, to be honest, Ben.
There was always that. But I'd observed him, I would have said, you need to be Chief Spot. Because we have to go back to the fact that it is actually called Spot. I know you and I have come to blows over this, metaphorically, because you say, no, it's not. It's called One Man Went to Mo. No, it's Spot, because that's what it was originally. One Man Went to Mo.
One Man and his dog, Spot, went to Mo. Most of the time, yeah. I accept not all of the time, but yeah, most of the time, I will defer to you. Yeah. As I ought to for my elders.
In this instance, however, you won't.
No, I will. I think, because you were there when that was first sung, probably
indeed,
before I was. So,
indeed,
you know.
Because we used to say, let's all do Spot. One Man Went to Mo.
Yeah, but I think it's more commonly known now as One Man Went to Mo.
Well, because they don't mention Spot. That's
I always do.
Do you?
Yeah.
No, it gets
One Man
lost,
and his dog Spot went to Mo.
Well, I think you're rare because I just hear One Man and his dog went to Mo.
No, that's because it's like everybody, they're just lazy. But I always do. In the Matthew Harding upper, 10 men went to Mo, went to Moa Meadow. 10 men, 9 men, 8 men, 7 men, 6 men, 5 men, 4 men, 3 men, 2 men, 1 man and his dog Spot
went to Moa Meadow.
Always said Spot.
Oh, okay. But it was called Spot.
Spot was the dog.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed.
That's right.
Then you'd add on one every time, really, but then it would be the longest song ever.
I used to like it when it got to 10. It would be 10 men, 9 men, 8 men, 7 men, 7 men. And when I'm drunk, as I invariably am at the football, I would get it with like 4 men, 2 men. Well, oh, fuck. Then went to my meadow. So anyway.
It used to be sausage roll, old Mother Riley and her cow.
Do you know what? I didn't actually know. I tell you a song that I really, really miss, which used to get sung a lot 20 years ago, but has been fizzling out gradually. which is, of course, now...
Dublin's
Fair City, where the girls are so pretty. I first set my eyes on sweet Molly Malone.
Here we will, barrow
through streets broad and narrow, singing. Chelsea! I used to love that. Anyway.
Me too. One of my favourites.
One of my favourites.
Absolutely. I love it.
Chelsea! Anyway, apropos,
went to the football. Everyone just went Chelsea. That came in. Chelsea, we all went. Oh yeah, that's a pop song.
Yeah. Well, I used to like, you're gonna get your fucking head kicked in. It's really funny if you watch some of those big matches. You quite often get them on BT Sport. You get a load of the of those kind of songs. One of my favourite.
Hear them, don't you?
About the aggro ones, you know. If you like a lot of aggro with your biscuit, join our club.
Yeah.
Which I used to
love. Of course, was some club biscuit for anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about.
I think
about.
It's actually, if you want a lot of aggro with Chelsea, join our club. Yeah, not biscuit, but I like
to. If you like a lot of chocolate on your biscuit, join our
that's right.
Biscuit, which I have to say was very tasty.
If you'd go down to the shed today,
you better come in disguise.
If you go down to the shed today, no.
You're sure for a good surprise, but I come in disguise.
Jeremy, the sugar puff bear, has the cropped. Hang on, was it? Oh, see, it's so long I haven't sung it. So it's just, he's bought some boots and cropped his hair. Today's the day that Jeremy became a skinhead. Something like that. It's very funny. Anyway, we're digressing down a ridiculous, bloody, God knows what's going on here. Desert Island Discs with JK and Chidge, I think. Anyway, this is from Bobby D. Lovely Bobby D, Robert Delsini. This is a great story. I do love Bobby D. It's about time we saw you, mate. I hope you're all right in Australia. He says, g'day, Cobber, from wonderful, sunny Melbourne. I see what you've done there, mate. Right, after the wonderful but melancholy Saints and Sinners podcast, I thought I would share some joy in the story of how I became a Chelsea fan. Firstly, with Mother's Day around the corner, I would like to thank my mother for taking me and my sister to my first game in 1981. It could not have been easy taking a hyperactive 9-year-old to a game. Anyway, picture this, a skinny blonde-haired 7-year-old running around the streets kicking a ball in those wonderful days before the world became a car park and kids weren't sedentary. One of the boys that lived opposite was 3 years older than me. He came up to me and asked which team I supported. I didn't have a team and was really confused. I looked up to him and hung on his every word, as every 7-year-old did to a 10-year-old. Well, he continued, you know the team you should support is the one that won the FA Cup when you were born. What year were you born? 1972, I replied enthusiastically. At this point, I became very fortunate, as my neighbour was an Arsenal supporter. And as such, he knew fuck all about football. So instead of confirming Leeds, he told me, you need to support Chelsea then. And there it was. An Arsenal supporter told me to support Chelsea. My granddad was an Arsenal supporter, and no one in my house supported the Blues. It was a dumb-ass Arsenal fan who meant I've had much joy over the last 40-plus years. As a footnote, as soon as I became a Blue, I ran inside really excited and went up to my dad and proudly proclaimed, I'm a Chelsea supporter. He gave me a disgusted look and my old man said, be a Rangers fan. To which I replied, fuck off bollocks, you're a... So there you have it. The truth about how Chelsea found me via a dumb Arsenal fan. One final thought. We're playing shit, but 3 points ahead of Liverpool and 6 points behind Man United in second. We just beat the leaders of La Liga 1-0 and I've seen my team win the league multiple times and the Champions League. Could be worse. You could support Arsenal. Take care and up the Chelsea. Bobby D.
Good old Bobby D.
Fantastic. Now, this one's a bit of a ripper.
Cheech.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Cheech, I'd be bereft. Inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK. And best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/ChelseaFancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to Chidge and the Boys on the Chelsea Football Fancast. Total nutters and proper Chelsea.
Footballfancast.com. Can I just say, before we start this one, kind regards, Benjamin William Oscar Brooks.
Yeah, and on that point, for Mr. A. Williams, I didn't get a chance to say it earlier on, but I'd love to have a drink with him when we get back to normal. That would be lovely. That's one of the things.
A stand for?
I don't know. Andrew, Alan, who knows? Andy, yeah.
Alex,
yeah. Antonio, who knows? I mean, look, one of the things I miss most.
Arthur,
yeah. One of the things I miss most about match day is meeting people and the cock who listen to the show that we've not met before. So the sooner we get back to that, the better.
Aloysius.
Yes. Archibald.
Archie. Yeah.
Augustus.
Cain and Abel.
Augustus.
Yeah. Aristotle.
Yeah. Aristotle was a bugger for the bottle.
Thank you. Anyway, this is from Philip Kenley. NB, written before the Man U game. Guys, thank you for reading out my emails 2 and 3 weeks ago. It's a great thrill. Oh, no, great. Love to do it, Philip. Thanks for writing. I'm loving this argument and I'm full of frustration. You all keep missing the point. Ooh. Hope this isn't now getting tedious for the listeners, but I need to come in again, do my best to stop the fake news, which in my humble opinion does not do your great show justice. Let's be very clear first. I don't want to be misunderstood and be described as someone I am not. We agree on lots. In particular, Frank was treated badly and may well have been used. I felt ill when Frank was sacked. Our transfer dealings have been really poor, leaving us with an unbalanced squad and a disaster of a rather expensive goalkeeper. I, like you, dream of a manager coming and building something that lasts. And if that person is an ex-player that we loved, wow, that would be just amazing. Okay, no issues there. However, that does not mean, in my opinion, that people have a right to say stuff that is clearly just not true. So, the latest comment that made my blood boil, please do not take this as a personal attack. I love listening to everyone you get on the show, but Alex saying last week, we just have to suck it up as fans, can only be likened to Monty Python's and what have the Romans ever done for us? We are almost literally the luckiest fans on planet Earth. The last 25 years have been almost entirely wonderful. How many times in the last 25 years have we got to March with absolutely nothing to play for? The amount of finals, semi-finals, titles that we've been in contention for is possibly only matched by Man U and clubs that compete in leagues where they're totally and boringly dominant. It has been unimaginably brilliant. Saying that we have to suck it up as fans is ungratefulness of the highest magnitude. Then there's the money thing. So, Mr. Glover, I'm going to have a pop again. When you say it's all about the money, I just don't think that's true about Chelsea. The truth with Chelsea is that it's all about the success. Roman has never taken any money out of Chelsea. We're a cash-eating monster that will always lose money, as we're not as commercially successful as Man U, Liverpool, Arsenal, and even, I'm afraid to say, Spurs. The one thing you can absolutely never accuse Roman of is being in it for the money. By all means, accuse him of being a ruthless son of a bitch who treats managers badly. That might be fair, though I would argue that their compensation makes up for this. Building on this point, I want to challenge the arsenalification of Chelsea. Surely the arsenalification of Chelsea would look like us keeping Lampard for 5 years, making minimal transfer market investments as we finish between fourth and eighth year in and year out. That's what happened to Arsenal. Do you know how much Arsenal fans would love to have had Chelsea's trajectory for the last 15 years? Do you know how bored and fed up Arsenal fans are? Roman's latest ruthless move is 100% entirely made to try and ensure we are not arsenalified. Finally, do you hear your Man U mate on Friday? Did you hear your Man U mate on Friday? That was Aaron. The Glazers. That could happen to us if Roman gets fed up and sells up. Having had enough of Chelsea fans that accuse him of being just in it for the money. Should that happen, please don't look back, revise history, and say how much you always loved the way Roman ran Chelsea when he was in charge. Actually, another finally. 2 weeks ago, you almost accused me of being a spectator as opposed to a fan. Can I swear at you for that? That hurt. For 47 years now, my moods have been inextricably linked to our results. I write from a place that remembers 10,000 crowds and a time when Mickey Droy and Tommy Langley were the best we had. Apology accepted. Thank you, and I can't wait to hear you discuss this after discussing our wonderful 2-0 win over Man U. Oh, I mucked that up. 2-0 win over Man U. Yes, Philip, of course we didn't. We drew 0-0 and it was a bit tedious. But good points. How did we accuse Philip of being a spectator?
We didn't.
I don't remember that at all.
Well, no. I mean, look, you know, we're here to give our opinions, as you are too. And you are most welcome to do that, as you well No, and I mean, what I don't understand about the last kind of, you know, kind of three elements of correspondence is that actually we are broadly and have always been broadly in agreement with you. I mean, I think just to pick up on the last point about Aaron talking about Man United the other day, I as you will remember, I'm sure, JK, the first thing I said is if anybody out there wants to have a dig at Roman, we should remember this.
Absolutely. Remember the Glazers. Absolutely.
Do you remember me saying that?
Yeah, absolutely right.
That we've been enormously lucky to have.
Well, I suppose, as you said, he's entitled to have his view of what he thinks we should be talking about. But we all have different views, especially Tony's got a different view about Frank. He's got a different view about what he considers boring football from me. And he and I both have the odd moment of disagreement, particularly over Sarri. And that was a big area of difference. And in fact, it's that having the different opinions is what makes the show very fresh and entertaining, actually, I think.
I don't think Philip's got an issue at all with the show. I mean, I know Philip likes the show and I like Philip, you know, and I love. I mean, that's the point, actually. Philip's email is the point. The point is that we all have an opinion on football, but that's what they are. They're opinions. Opinions are not facts. So, Philip, keep writing them in because I love hearing your opinions. I don't like it when you. I mean, and I know that your the way that you write is, it there's a lovely light touch to it. You're not being rude about anybody, and I do get that. And maybe I'm being a bit defensive, but I love my friends, and I will always back them up. But you know, we're just talking opinions. We're not a news channel. It's opinions as much as your great emails to us are opinions. So. Keep them coming, Philip, and I, for one, am certainly incredibly grateful to Roman, and I'm proud to say I got the opportunity to say that to him once when I met him. So, you know, there we go. Philip, brilliant. Oh, is it my turn again?
I think you've marked it as being your turn.
I know, I was about to have a breath. Right, this is from Jeff Jones. Chidge, Jonathan, and distinguished guests. I'm writing this after listening to half of the Friday review preview show. I paused it as you all started to talk about whether or not Jorginho should start against United on Sunday. He shouldn't. I'm not sure why he's getting praise for his performance against Atleti, seeing as how he overhit multiple passes that couldn't have led to a goal-scoring chance. He's a decent player and can slow the game down and keep possession, but he doesn't seem to be able to execute the final pass. I'd much rather have Kante and Kova as the double six because they can tackle and carry the ball forward. I'll be interested to see if Tuchel's team selection tomorrow... it's a huge match. This is written clearly before the United match, I think. It's a huge match, and I think we can all get 3 points. I'm thinking 2-1 to us. Jorginho will probably get an assist or score a pen, so I'll be eating my words come Monday. Yes. Sadly, that didn't happen, Jeff. Incessant thanks to you and Jonathan and all the Fancast crew for keeping our spirits up during these strange times. Keep the blue flag flying high. Jeff J, Atlanta, Georgia.
Sweet.
Very.
He didn't play him, unfortunately, old Jorginho. So, what a shame.
What shame.
What a shame. But great to hear from you, Jeff. And I'd love to come to Atlanta, Georgia sometime. A city I've admired from pictures and afar. But anyway, good stuff. We could meet and talk things Chelsea. Right, James Giffin. Good day to you all from sunny Perth, Western Australia. Thought I'd send this before the match. I'm sure there will be enough supporters emailing in about the game versus United. So I'm going to write about something I've not heard you speak about yet.
Ooh.
Maybe it's for a reason, but bear with me. I've feared for some time that football, after trillions upon trillions spent on sponsorship, wages and transfers, etc., is bringing the game to a shuddering halt in terms of excitement. Top six clashes have become a proving ground for worried and scared coaches and players in most games over the last few years. Negative football doesn't excite me, you at the Fancast, or anyone else, I'm sure. Since 200/300 BC, when the Chinese invented Kodo through the Greek name of Episkyros, the Native American game of Aksatok. Yes, starting again. Since 200/300 BC, when the Chinese invented Kodo through the Greek game of Episkyros, the Native American game of Aksatok, until we invented the lovely game called mob football, where inflated pig's bladders were used to score a goal, the posts being the main doors of a church or chapel in the village you were from, I believe they had one rule: no stabbing. Now, I can't imagine FIFA rejuvenating this game somehow. What must happen is a way of guaranteeing more entertainment for 90 minutes. I call for change, a change in the points system, a change in the number of players, and one last change for the offside rule. They're laws, actually, James, laws, the offside law. Item one, back in 1981, thanks to Jimmy Hill, good old Jimmy Hill, the 3 points for a win was set up. Jimmy Hill became synonymous with telling a lie, didn't he? Somebody would, because he had such a big chin with his beard, somebody would say, "Ooh, Jimmy Hill, ooh," if they thought you were lying. Do you remember that, Jim?
I do.
Yeah. Ooh, and he was done like that. "Ooh, Jimmy Hill, ooh." Anyway, back in 1981, thanks to Jimmy Hill, ooh, the 3 points for a win was set up. This was to get away teams or lesser teams to go gung-ho every week, rather than sitting back and playing for a point. I was born in 1989, so I, of course, don't remember the change. My dad was, however, and he never really noticed from game to game. I propose an idea of 4 points for a win, 2 for a draw, 0 for a loss. However, if you score 2 goals or more, then you get a bonus point. It sounds very American or very rugby-ish, but I think it would stop this bullshit tactic of lesser sides going away from home and doing nothing remotely attacking, i.e. when Wolves came to the Bridge a few weeks ago. Very good point. This is very good, because what will happen, of course, I think it'll be telly that decides to make a decision about and people not watching the games if it becomes boring. Because it is on the verge of becoming boring. I absolutely agree. Because of people tactically being able to suppress sides from scoring, it just becomes, the joy becomes in the counterattack or in somebody like Bayern Munich unpicking sides. But yes, very good point. And rugby, of course, changed it by turning 3 points for a try into 4, which was cleverly done. But anyway, I was going to suggest you got 2 goals if you scored once, but that wouldn't work ever. That's just ridiculous. Don't know why I said it. Anyway, item two. This is to be introduced at the same time as a reduced team size on the field. I drop it down to 10 versus 10,
or maybe even 9 versus 9. The pitch is too small at the old grounds in England, especially Stamford Bridge, where it's so compact, there's nowhere for our fast players to gallop. With more space on the pitch, your flair players have more room to express themselves. And when crossing into the box, there'll be less players getting in the way. And of course, a few years ago, the other thing they thought they might do is make the goals bigger. Do you remember that, Chidge?
As a possibility? I do.
Yeah. Anyway, item three. Last one is the offside rule. It's actually a law, James. I'm sorry. Last one is the offside law. This one is more simple and less radical. If VAR is to stay, fine, but I make one small adjustment. When they break the lines out at Stockley Park, I'd like the measurement to be taken from the toe of the front foot to the heel of your back foot, both for the attacker and defender. If they overlap, onside. Yes, you still get the precise 1 millimetre fingernail hairline decisions, but it's a bigger range to be onside, so I presume that means more goals. I think aren't they having a meeting now to discuss everything again, the lawmakers? Isn't that right, Chidge? I think they are. I think they're having another refs meeting to work out... not refs meeting, I mean a law-making meeting to work out whether offside should change, whether VAR with offside should change, handball should change again.
Yes. I'll tell you what, though. I really, you know, I caught a bit of the rugby on Saturday because I happened to be up here doing a bit of work.
Yeah.
And I just thought that is a game that has been ruined by too many laws and then changing. I mean... I used to be able to understand rugby, and they change the laws every year.
And
they're so complicated, and then you get some pusillanimous little prick of a French referee who ruins it. And I'm just thinking, and I did actually think, thank God football is not like that. That and we moan about things like VAR, and quite rightly so. But and I know that there's a bit of confusion about some of the laws, but my God, it's not as bad as rugby.
I've actually got some mates who won't watch rugby union anymore because they say, why do I need to watch a game I don't understand? But can I just say the one thing I do like, which is they apparently in some leagues, they've mic'd the referees up in football. And I can't remember where it was, but there was a little item on Twitter about this. And it works really well because it also leads to the assistant referee, the linesman, being involved in the same way they are in rugby. And they debate with the referee whether they saw something as being a foul or not. And the referee can then refer it to VAR. So you've actually, they're using the linesman much more as they do in rugby union, because in rugby union, they're respected for being refs. Whereas, as we've established in football, they're considered, they defer to the referee who's considered their superior, which is absolutely wrong, but is the way that, football refereeing is run over here in this country. And I'm not convinced that they'd be able to have enough intelligent conversations with the linesman to actually make it work over here. They've just really got to start getting rid of some of these older, what would you call them? Statesmen, that's the wrong word, but just the older ones who are just not up with play and just give very strange decisions. Like poor old... what was the guy at the weekend who blew the whistle twice? Poor chap.
Lee Mason.
Yeah, I felt for him, actually, because he clearly cocked up enormously. You know, I mean, ridiculous. You just given the goal. It was a goal. Very well done. Blew his whistle. But apparently because he saw the referee, saw the goalkeeper wasn't ready. Well, yeah, that's the idea of taking it quickly, you know. So, poor chap. But anyway, no, I agree with you. It has become very complicated. But the whole essence of actually communicating with all the officials is absolutely the way football should go. And whether it is via miking the referees up and being able to hear all their words, then you hear the players' words, I think it would impose a structure on the game that we're really missing at the moment. Anyway, although I'm emailing from Australia, I'm in fact from a town just around the corner from Plymouth. So I appreciate the old school part of the game, but that's long gone. It's hard to admit, but the fun side of football is gone. Your Mavericks have dried up and your cheeky chappy Rebels, Stanley Bowles, are a thing of the past. You now have Jesse Lingard having 1 billion followers because he wears fedora with a pair of ripped jeans and a pair of Deirdre Barlow spectacles. What a character. I didn't know that. You've got a billion followers, bloody hell. On a serious note, though, I fear that when my young son, John, named after the captain, leader, legend, gets older, the game possibly won't be as entertaining as I felt it was when I was young, unless I come to power and smash my gavel down and implement the rules I've written here. Laws, surely, laws. The laws I've written here. Just one question. Can JK please tell us what it's like to kick an inflated pig's bladder around the local village back in the 1300s? Well, actually, I was quite good at keeping up with a pig's bladder. But you have to be what they do as well are nasty. They will put a stone in the pig's bladder when you kick it, see it lying on the ground. You kick it, you just do yourself a mischief. I'm sure your memory, as amazing as it is, remember the greats from that period. Yes, Alexander the Great. He was a terrific footballer at the time. Very good with the pig's bladder. And
he was the Pato of his day, really, wasn't he?
Oh, unbelievable, unbelievable. He was great. He was long blonde flowing hair and
Helen of Torres.
Those tunics they wore, blimey. Poof, great.
Socrates was a great footballer.
He was. Aristotle as well, yes. But he was, yeah. Good old Socrates.
Played for Brazil, didn't he?
The trouble was he insisted on playing in a toga and it just got in the way all the time.
Anyway, that reminds me of that Monty Python sketch, Philosophy Football. Do you remember that?
Yes.
That's one of the funniest sketches ever made.
Dredged it from. There was some amusing stuff.
Karl Marx was always offside.
Yes, yes, yes.
And having fights with the ref.
Oh, dear. Yes, he was always debating the laws, wasn't he, with the ref? Yeah. Blimey. Anyway, one more thing. When you mentioned AC/DC, I felt I must share this boring stroke interesting piece of pub ammo with you, Chidge. I lived on Canning Highway in Perth for some time. It's a dreary dual carriageway on the way to Fremantle. It's also what inspired the song Highway to Hell. It was an infamous pub crawl from Raffles Bar all the way down to Fremantle. You don't have to read this bit if the email's getting too long. Okay, right to the end. Bye. No. I look forward. We've read it, James. Look forward to the nice pay packet you sent me last time I sent an email to the fancast. Did you pay him, Chidge? Did you pay
him? No, I didn't. I don't know what he's talking about.
Oh, you did.
I did not.
Oh, Chidge, pay me, baby. Anyway, keep up the good work and up the Chelsea. James Giffin. Well done, James.
On a personal note, James, a brilliant email. Some really interesting points, wasn't there, actually?
Funny as well. Good stuff.
But on a personal note, I just want to say, I'm on a highway to hell. And I'm going down. No, I'm not doing any more of it.
I don't know any much of that song.
Oh, Bon Scott, man. But he's right. Yeah, I did know about the Canning Highway because I've read loads and loads of books on AC/DC. So I love AC/DC. What a cracking, a ripper of an email there, James. And obviously he's also would be acquainted with the Fremantle Doctor.
Yes, he would, wouldn't
which
he?
Which we all know about.
The wind, we know about it.
When England play at the Wacker.
Indeed, its influence on the cricket.
That's right. The Fremantle Doctor. Yeah. So there you go. James, I hope it's lovely where you are. I'm sure it is. Right now, we've left the best till last. But this is an absolutely brilliant, bonkers, cracking email from the wonderful Donald Foley, who is known as the Blue Bayou and is one of Tony's original pudding shedders, JK.
Is he?
Mmm.
Blimey.
And this is what I've got to really up my game here because I've got to do this the justice it deserves. And he writes, Dear Archbishop Chidge, as the strains of evensong die away, no, I didn't know blue is the colour was a staple of the hymnal either, and the congregation departs into the dark lanes, muttering about the lack of goals, and old Tony the gardener heads back to his podding shed, bemoaning a lack of excitement in our liturgy. I feel I must write to you to express my concerns that too many of our souls are adrift in the slough of despond. Yes, we are left behind the city of destruction, and sadly the evangelist is no longer with us. But too many are attracted by the false comfort of Vanity Fair, whereas their eyes should be on the celestial city. For yea, like Christian in Pilgrim's Progress, we are on a journey. Some will fall by the wayside, but we must instill within our brothers and sisters a hope, an expectation, yes, a determination that we will not be lured away by excitement, incident, chance creation, high conversion of XG, end-to-end, goal fests, and other such temptations of Beelzebub. Brother Tuchel is here to lead us, to deliver us from the promises of false gods. It is Lent, a period of fasting and abstinence. We are building strength of spirit, forswearing our piteous and lily-livered devotion to such insubstantial gee-jaws as trophies, as short-term success. We must don with joy in our hearts the sackcloth that Brother Tuchel has given to us for our clothing. We must embrace an ascetic, arid form of devotion, for it is only through this that we will reach true redemption. The sphere within where the twits abide is a dark place, awash with despair, with discontent, with endless speculation on how many more souls we need to make a conquering army. Little do they understand how it is only by abnegation of such falsities that Brother Tuchel will lead us to eternal peace and joy. Before I fold away my cassock and prepare a small but nourishing collation, I must remark upon the sad passing of Johnny Briggs, announced so aptly on the day we played a team from Manchester. For, as Mike Baldwin, he strove for many years to depict all that was good about Gentlemen from London and its environs. Set about by scriptwriters who wished only to portray him as a villain in contrast to the Mancunian hero, their beloved Ken Barlow, men of discernment like ourselves could see through such wafer-thin and blatant concoctions. And in one of those strange coincidences that enrich the soul, someone posted a clip on Twitter from the film HMS Defiant, in which Briggs's character is sentenced to 2 dozen lashes by Alec Guinness. As he is brought out, someone shouts, "Ship's company, ready to witness punishment, sir." One can't help but feel that is how many now approach watching our beloved CFC. As the lashes are applied to the hapless Briggs, one young cabin boy says to his associate, who is looking to faint at any moment, "Only 3 more, look at your feet." Sound advice to all of us. As Werner bears down on goal yet again, the lashes complete, someone addresses Alec Guinness. "Punishment complete, sir." "Cut him down," is the order. And I visualise Mr. Glover and countless other fans released for a few more days to tend their smarting wounds. But we must be strong. This is a period of transition. It will indeed be painful, but suffering enriches the soul. Yours, in the Lord, the Reverend Bayou.
I should have read it in my vicar's voice.
Well, it's too late. I've read it now and I did the best I could.
No, I'm not criticising. It just occurred to me. I thought, I could have done my...
I think that was a wonderful... I mean, Donal is bonkers. If you've ever talked to Donal, he's lovely. One of my favourite people at Chelsea. Very, very funny, very, very intelligent guy. And that was a highly, highly entertaining email to round off in off the post, JK.
Can I just say that that nice coincidence, of course, was that my dad played Mike Baldwin's father, Frank. He was Frankie Baldwin in Coronation Street. And he said Johnny Briggs was a very nice guy, as well as a good actor. But this was 39 years ago. No, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
My dad played his father.
I didn't realise that he was as old as he clearly was, actually. But there you go. But I think the religious symbolism within supporting your football club is very apt, actually. And we should just learn to look at our feet while the horror is amongst us.
The horror.
Yeah. I've got a lovely pic I'm going to put up with the show tonight of Giroud with his shirt over his head. Like Donal suggesting, in a sense, looking at his feet, but rather protecting his and shielding his eyes from the horror that was all around him. But there you go.
But he just missed the open goal. Was it that one?
I don't know. I don't remember. No, he was writhing around in pain, wasn't he? Because he'd like collided with the post.
Collided with the post. Yeah.
And somebody said he missed the goal but hit the post, which I thought was quite. That was not bad for commentary.
Yes.
It wasn't bad. JK, that's it, my friend, for this week. There were a few, there were a few submissions that came in on Discord today and Patreon. Do you know what? Bollocks. I'm going to read one more out on Patreon. Sorry, JK, you can't see this because I can only get to it by my phone. But it's lovely, so I'm going to read it. It's from Charlie Huskinson. And I, what I was going to say is that we got a few, I've got questions for the show thing on the Discord group, but if you don't, if you send them on a Monday, it's too late, because I put the script to bed on a Sunday night. I have shit to do on a Monday, so I don't have time to do it. So if you want it read out, you need to stick them in by Sunday. And I mean, not like 11 o'clock p.m. on a Sunday. I mean, you know, afternoon latest, really. But the other thing is, on Discord, I do believe that there is a facility for you to record a voice message. So I wonder if you could record a voice message and I can somehow save it, and then we can play it in the show. Would that be fun, JK?
Love it.
Save our bloody larynxes, wouldn't it?
I would love it.
Yeah. So maybe do that. That's a thing for Discord people only. You can leave us a phone message on the Discord app and we can play it out on the show. How about that? But either way, don't do it on a Monday. Monday is too late, man. Too late. Anyway, this did come in from Charlie Huskinson on Patreon. And as I said, if you want to join us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/Chelsea. I think it's Chelsea-Fancast, but Chelsea Fancast. All donations pleasantly received. You get a Kerry Dixon banner and you also get to be on our Discord group. Right. Charlie says, "Hi, Chidge. I hope you and the guys have a great show tonight. You guys don't realise the joy you bring talking about the Chelsea, especially at the moment when we're unable to get to the games. I'm obviously gutted with the draw against United, as I personally think they were there for the taking. In my opinion, Werner had to start ahead of Ziyech after his performances in recent weeks, and so would have pace up top, with Giroud obviously lacking in that department. I'd love to know yours and other fancasters' opinions on Ziyech. He clearly has quality, but he seems to have no pace, no desire to track back, gets caught in possession a lot, plays wayward passes without getting his head up, and always seems to be on the floor. To me, he looks like an average player who looked great in an average league. After the other night, I'm very excited to hear about the possibility of memorabilia, as I'm a massive collector, and with you mentioning the name Bill, I'm guessing it's the Football Prizes Company. Keep the blue flag flying high, Charlie Huskinson." Charlie, first up, yes, you guessed correctly. We're doing a partnership with Football Prizes, and as soon as the deal is done, I will be letting you all know. But basically, it will entail you being able to buy tickets for about a fiver, I think, and then you get to take part in a live draw for Chelsea-related memorabilia, and they hold it on Facebook, but there'll be more about that later. But JK, I have to say, I completely agree with his comments about Ziyech.
Yes. It's a bit worrying, isn't it, that, as we've been talking about on the Fancast, it's. I really hope that he isn't somebody who was just stood out a big fish in a small pond. But when he started, he had a, as we talked about before, he had a wand, didn't he? A wand-like foot. But at the moment, he's looking not really up to it.
I mean, it's worth remembering, isn't it? You know, and I think I think this is kind of the roboticization, if that is a word, of society as a whole. And I've got a great mate who's doing a PhD on this subject about how technology and our reliance on it is all making us, you know, we're affected by it. You know, it's making us more robotic. It's making us think in a different way, because it's created by people who think in a certain way, and when we use it a lot, it takes us down that path. And I think we're losing humanity, and I think in our judgment on football we're also losing humanity, because there are no guarantees in football. You know, you buy a player for a lot of money and you think, yeah, they should be brilliant, but not necessarily, because there are so many variables and complexities within the character of that person, let alone everything else that's going on environmentally. And there ain't no guarantees, mate.
I was going to think whether Ajax played in a more honest way or a more human way, but on reflection, they appeared to play a very technical side of type of football, a very tactical type of football. So I'm surprised that he may have embraced a kind of... he may have been dulled by embracing a robotic style. Ziyech, because he seemed to be in a setup where he was allowed to express himself.
Look, I mean, what we're really talking about, I mean, you know this, I know this from working in production teams, you know this from working in the theatre and stuff. I've worked in the theatre too. You know, you put a bunch of disparate people together and sometimes they gel. And the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and sometimes they don't. And there's no right. It's about chemistry. There's no right. I mean, who would have known? I mean, it's an interesting. We're a case in point. You know, if you look back at the first few shows we did, completely did none. There's nobody on this show now apart from me who was on the first 100 shows. You know, we've had different people all the time, but you know, inshallah, we've been very lucky. Everybody that I've got on the show, we all gel, really. I mean, I can't think of a case where we just haven't gelled. We all get on. Bizarre, isn't it?
That's a very good point, isn't it? Yeah, how it all works. Yeah.
Maybe we should be running football teams, mate.
Yeah, perhaps
maybe,
we should.
Maybe not.
Should we set up a Chelsea FC?
AFC Chelsea.
Yeah, we let's spell it differently. Yeah.
Play on Ilbrook Common.
Chelsea FS. That'd confuse people, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that would.
Yeah, with Chelsea Football.
CFC UK.
Chelsea Football Shed.
Yeah, yeah. AFC Chelsea, mate. Ilbrook Common. Get your boots. You'll all get a game.
It really gets a game. Yeah, just to put down jumpers.
There you go. Happy days.
Yeah, for the play for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And if 252 to 200,
last goal wins it.
Exactly.
Those were the fucking days, weren't they? Coming home absolutely covered and head to toe from. I used to love getting really muddy. I've clearly got some kind of weird sexual deviance for being really muddy that you wouldn't have realised as an 8-year-old boy, obviously. Only now as a psychotherapist do I understand the significance of these things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I used to love getting muddy. My mum used to tear her hair out. And or you come home when it was dark. You know, that was a thing.
I used to wear gloves when I played football.
Did you?
I wonder what that was all about.
You were clearly a continental player.
Yeah, no, I think what it was.
Or Patrick Bamford.
When we played on the we played on the playground at school, it was concrete, and I kept falling over and gashing my hands. I think that's the reason.
Anyway, I'm going to leave us with a really rude comment from Benji Toe. He says, "You need to upgrade your squad, Chidge." What are you talking about, Benji? What do you mean?
Get new people in. That's what he wants.
No, well, we do. No, but we do. We do.
That's what he's saying.
Well, I think he's wrong. I think he's wrong on both counts. One, we don't need to, and B, I already am. But I think we've got the biggest cast of people that we've ever had now. I mean, we've got about 12 regulars plus the journos. So there we go. Sam and Adam and you. What are you talking about, Benji? Sam and Adam and you, big money signings, as Keep the Blue Flag Flying High says. The next we've got an academy talent. Did I ever told you about the academy talent, JK?
No, he's coming in.
Well, we got Louis Tomsett, who writes for the Fancast. Dean scouted him, right? And he's quite
to Sally Tomsett.
I don't know. Maybe we'll get her instead. I'd quite like that.
She's an actress. Yes. Good.
She's probably a bit old now.
She was in The Railway Children.
She was, wasn't she? I remember her. Jesus Christ! Yeah, yeah, bloody hell. And so was
Jenny Agutter.
Bernard Cribbins.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, so we completely... He does this to me all the time. He's completely knocked me sideways. But, Louis Tomsett, he's very young. He loves Jorginho, so he'd be controversial. But he writes very well for the Fancast, and I promised him a go at some stage. Dane's quite a newcomer.
Yeah. So's Dean.
Dean's almost old school now, isn't he? He's been
around
for a while.
Yeah, but still, in terms of... Yeah, but it's still... It's not as if, you know, you've got to bed people down, you know. You've got to, I mean...
Mark Meehan, you know.
Got to give them an opportunity because they're not used to the...
Mark Meehan's like signing Mark Hughes
for
Chelsea.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Mark's been there, done it, won loads of trophies, absolutely legend of a player.
He's come straight in and done it, unlike some of the younger guys, allowing a few weeks for them to bed down.
Yeah, didn't need it at all. Scored spanking volley, show straight one, boom, off and running.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. So I'm not having it, Benji. I love you to pieces, but you're wrong, son. Anyway, we better go, JK.
No. Yes,
no, we better go. It's been lovely to have a bit of overtime with you. Really enjoyed it, actually.
Very good fun. Good fun being
it. Good emails as well. Lovely of you to send them in, people. Hope we've done them justice. As you know, get them in on a Sunday, preferably in the afternoon, not the evening. They come on a Monday, they don't get in the show because I would have done the script by then. And if you do send them in, send them to chelseafancast@gmail.com. On that mic drop moment. It's time for me and JK to say goodnight and have a good week. We will see you on Friday for the preview show at 7 o'clock live on Mixlr. JK, have fun, mate. I'll see you then.
Right on, Chid. Good thing.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.